Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. We have been on a kind of break, sabbatical type vacation slash all of those other things.
But sabbatavacation?
Sabbatavacation of whatever.
That sounds like Batman's involved.
But we are back and we are ready to take on the new year as 2023 is in its full swing and we are ready to hit those theaters. And that includes this review that we do of course, Creed 3. So with me as well, again, I've forgotten how to do this. Alongside me, as always, I am your host, Eddie Villanueva. And alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Anderson Williams.
Okay.
That actually sounds like a boxer's real name.
Yeah, it could be.
Too bad it isn't. Now, just also with us, you just heard her a little bit ago. Unfortunately, she is back on the show as well within this new year. That is intern slash part-timer slash all the other names, Amy.
Yay, names.
Names. So we got a great show in store as we prepare you for this awesome review as we dive into the conversation and get into a lot of what we used to love and do last year or so in the 2023.
I mean, we did some this year.
Yeah, we did like...
A month.
We did a couple. So we'll get into the specs of all that and whatnot. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give them those opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning from now on because we will be posting on all your favorite streaming platforms.
Yes, we will.
Over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can catch us on our website wherever you go online at filmlosophers.com. We got over 300 episodes. Allegedly, and we got everything from action, comedy, suspense, thriller, all of the above. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website, filmlosophers.com. You can also find us wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those pages. Check us out. Look us up at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow. Give us a subscribe. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Give us a comment in the drop box below. We'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. We have been away for about a month, and it's been a very interesting time. As it's not without incident that we happened to take a step back for the month of February. Unfortunately, as those of you who follow our social pages, I did have a passing in the family, and it was really difficult. And it was one of those things that kind of took over my life. And it was really kind of not really a shocker, but at the same time, still a shocker because we expected this, as her health was declining, but at the same time, it was still unpleasant and unfortunate that we lost her. Throughout that time, we posted as often as we could and, we threw up GoFundMes and whatnot. And to be quite honest, I was actually pretty stoked to see that a few of you listeners, a few folks who listened to the podcast actually donated, and it did help towards the funds of helping lay my grandmother to rest. So from the bottom of my heart, if you're listening and you were somebody who either hearted the post or you felt it in your within you to give, or even if you just sent positive vibes or you sent prayers or thoughts, whatever it is, I just want you to know I appreciate it, and I know that my family appreciates it, and of course, none of this would have been feasible, none of my ability to push through all this and make it to the other side, if it wasn't also for my podcast mates here. They're not only my part of my podcast family, but they are my real family, and I Spencer has been constantly checking in, making sure I'm doing all right, making sure I'm eating, asking if there's anything he can do, literally wanting to bring his big old TV over so we can play video games and so forth. And same thing with Amy. Amy checked in on me. She gave me phone calls. She sent me text messages. sent me food and sent flowers to my family's house and so forth. And so it was really a difficult time, but because of the people I surround myself with and because of the people that choose to allow me to be a part of their life, it's usually difficult for me to allow myself to be vulnerable in that place. When you're a film critic, you typically have to have kind of tough skin, you know, because you're going to hear everybody else's opinion and pretty much either agree with you, and that's the good side of it, or disagree with you. And that's a really sliding slope, because it could be anything from like, well, I don't know if I agree with that, to you're stupid and you don't know what you're talking about.
This is why I'm still an intern. I can't handle that.
And I've had all of that. I've had people tell me, you know, my opinion was dumb, my thoughts were idiotic, or I mean, I've experienced both sides, you know, the good and the bad. But as a film critic, being a film critic for over like 10 years now, you learn to take the good with the bad and you learn to push through. And this was one of those moments where I actually took that tough skin and I was able to take off the, you know, protective hat to be in a place where I could receive the love from the people that I care about. And so, again, for anybody who even saw the post, who liked the post, who hearted it, who gave kind words, who gave or even gave to the GoFundMe or whatever, know that from the bottom of my heart and from my family as well, we appreciate you. And yeah, it's people like you who help make this podcast continually push forward, because even though we love, each one of us loves to hear the sound of our own voice at times, especially Amy. We know that we also do it because there are fans out there who enjoy what we say and enjoy what we do here. So, as a segue to that, we do want to give out a special shout out to one of our favorite listeners, who just happens to be celebrating a birthday on March 14th
on Pi Day.
On Pi Day, she's a Pi girl. And that is one of our fans. Her name is Rachel in the Sacramento area. Rachel, if you're listening to this, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
We hope that you have a wonderful evening. And I'm pretty sure it would have been yesterday that you had the wonderful evening. But either way, we want to wish you a wonderful and fun-filled cinematic birthday. And we hope you and your family get to celebrate you with the most fanfare as much as possible.
Burr, 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 burr.
Yeah.
We haven't done this in so long. I am ham-fisting everything.
I don't know what you're trying to ham-fist.
We don't normally have a soundboard anymore.
We did at one point in time, and then
I got too into that. Had to go away.
Wait, too into that? No. Was this pre-sheep? Post-sheep?
I don't know what this woman's talking about. So we used to have a soundboard that was connected to the system, and it would play all these random sounds that we would have throughout the entire episode. And it was insane. But the problem with soundboards is you have to program the sounds, or you have to find ones that have the most unique sounds. And it can become a very deep and dark hole as you either find apps, you find programs on iPads, which is what we were using, or you find actual, you know, soundboards and program it yourself. Spencer more than likely did the latter than the former's.
Yeah, I was just playing around with what we had.
We had a lot.
It was fun.
It was interesting. Maybe we'll bring that back one day. We keep saying that. We're like, oh, we'll bring up soundboard. Maybe we'll bring that up. We've said that already like 2 years
running.
Don't
bring it back. I'll play with it.
It
needs to die and stay
dead. It had so many different things. It had explosions. And we actually used to do our extra credit episodes with a bell that was rung on the on the soundboard. So, but yeah, I digress. Happy birthday, Rachel. We thank you for listening. We appreciate you being a fan. And we cannot wait to meet you in person to celebrate with you one day. So, but that does direct us to our main conversation of the evening, and that is
birthdays.
Not birthdays. What's wrong with you?
It's either people we want to meet IRL or birthdays, right?
No.
Okay, then what is it?
We're talking about Creed 3. This movie has honestly been one of those ones that has not only been on my mind quite a bit, but it's also been a controversial movie coming up due to the situations with Sylvester Stallone and Erwin Winkler and the rest of the team there. So we'll dive into a little bit more of that as we go on. But Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
When a childhood friend and former boxing prodigy Damien resurfaces after serving a long sentence in prison, he is eager to prove that he deserves his shot in the ring. The face-off between former friends is more than just a fight.
There you go. Directed and starring Michael B. Jordan in his directorial debut, the film also stars Tessa Thompson, Jonathan Majors, Wood Harris, Florian Munitianu, and Felicia Rashad. Sylvester Stallone actually, so a couple of notes about the film. As I mentioned earlier, the controversy. Sylvester Stallone spoke to The Hollywood Reporter about not reprising his role as Rocky, which, I mean, to be quite frank, a lot of people expected him to come back in some form or fashion, or at least have some kind of inclusion in the story. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. As when he spoke to them about the sequel, he said, "That's a regretful situation because I know what it could have been," Stallone told the THR reporter. "It was taken in a direction that is quite different than I would have taken it. It's a different philosophy, and producer Erwin Winkler's and Michael B. Jordan's," Stallone said. "I wish them well, but I'm much more of a sentimentalist. I like my heroes getting beat up, but I just don't want them going into that dark space. I just feel people have enough darkness." He goes on to say about how there were certain situations where he actually had mentioned that why he hadn't had the property rights or the actual rights to the character of Rocky, which unfortunately I believe the producers own that that IP. So yeah, it's not something that he can have anymore. But that does bring us to our next point, which is Michael B. Jordan actually is, to my surprise, a huge anime fan, and this film borrows various elements from Hajime no Ippo and Megalobox. There are even shots that are borrowed straight from Dragon Ball Z and Naruto. Now, I don't know if you know anything about that, Spence.
About those first two, no.
No, you don't know anything?
Mm-mm.
Because I was like at a loss. I was like, I'm not aware of those ones. But
man, apparently he's more hardcore than
he's hardcore than us too. And he's handsome. We're screwed.
I know. it's very upsetting.
But it's cool. It's kind of like when Michael B. Jordan mentioned how he was like a fan of Akira and he wanted to make sure that he puts inclusions of certain fandoms that he has in his films and whatnot. I think this is one of those things where like it's cool because even as a kid, like if you look at some of the scenes where he is as a kid in the film, he actually has some like anime stuff all over his walls and so forth. So. One last piece of information. In the movie, Jonathan Majors' character Damien is actually a couple years older than Adonis, Michael B. Jordan. However, Jordan is actually Jonathan Majors' senior by 2 years in real life. So they did some work to make Jonathan Majors look a little older and gruffed, but he's actually the youngin compared to Jordan. So. As we dive into this film, just a heads up, we are going to be hitting on some spoilers, so you have been warned. This is your first, last, and only warning for our upcoming conversation. Spoiler alert. As we dive into this conversation, first thing I wanted to actually talk to you guys about is, what is your guys' history with the Rocky franchise? Because if you look at it as a whole, it's all still part of the same franchise. Nothing has changed. And it's very much, you know, still something that is tied together with all three. I mean, Rocky was literally in 1 and 2 of Creed movies. And yeah, so let me start with you, Spence. Have you seen any of the Rocky movies?
Goodness. Yeah, I've seen all of them. But like I shift on how much I remember from like which movie and when.
Yeah.
But clearly my favorite is going to be Rocky IV because it is the most ridiculous of them.
It is. It's one of those ones where it's like, okay, there was a Family Guy episode where they were like, you know, oh man, they're going to do like Rocky 10, Rocky fights, you know, the Martians in space or something. And like, you know, he goes off and he's like, well, if I can't breathe, then they can't breathe either. You know, you know, it's
they gave Polly a robot.
They did. And that was in the third one.
That was terrible. I know. That wasn't even the fourth one.
That was the third one. Yeah, that was the one where he fights Clubber Lang.
Where are you going, Polly?
Yeah, that was like the series had just made a turning point when they introduced that robot. So yeah, but I'm pretty like I've seen all the movies basically. Yeah.
What about you, Amy? What's your history with the franchise? I know for a fact that you are pretty fresh in terms of seeing. Mm-hmm. Most of the films.
Yeah. I think the only one I haven't seen would be the fifth Rocky.
Which you don't need to.
Which, yeah, I was told by both of you, you don't need to worry about it. He goes broke and he has to move back.
He doesn't get broke. They steal his money from a power of attorney in that one.
Wait, what happened?
So in the fifth one, hold on to the Google machine. So in the fifth one, Rocky comes. It literally takes place at the end of the fourth movie. He's in the locker room, and you know they're celebrating in the locker room, all of them. And he's like in another part of it. He's like, Adrian. He goes, I can't stop shaking my hands. You know, and so they take him to the hospital, and comes to find out that he's got like a really bad brain injury where they told him he can't box anymore. And that if he's going to remain, you know, here on Earth still, that he's going to have to not do any damage to his head because one more hit to the head and I believe he could die. Something to that effect, which is interesting because he went on to do another movie as an older man and boxed.
Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, okay. So I think I remember this one the least.
I think everybody remembers this one the least. Because it has nothing to do with actual, like, in-boxing fighting for Rocky. Like, it's all about Rocky training some young guy who comes through, Tommy the Gun, and then he gets swept up in the glamour of winning bouts. Because of the fact that Rocky went to Russia to fight Ivan Drago, he had to relinquish the belt, and so he was no longer the champ. So the Tommy the Gun ended up going all the way to beating someone who was like next in line or whatever and ends up winning the championship. But all the press call him like a paper champion. He's only a champion on paper because he hasn't beaten the best, and the best is Rocky. And so it ends up being this big old street fight. This Don King satire character is like, you fight Tommy in the ring, all this kind of stuff or whatever. And yeah, they have a street fight and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so like stills of this movie look familiar to me, but like I think I just retconned it out of my memory.
Well, that was because Rocky Jr. ages like 10 years overnight. You know, it goes from
a
like
kid with the robot, and then he's not.
Because even if there's like time in between, that's a lot of time from the end of that fight where we see Rocky's kid watching the fight on Christmas at his home in the U.S. as a little tyke. He's probably like eight or nine. And then you go back, and he's like 13 when they get the story going. So
that's what happens when you travel across time zones.
That is true. Your children age. That is right.
Did you want me to finish up?
Because, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So the reason.
My bad.
Yeah, we just cut me off. It's happening already. So the reason actually I was kind of forcibly introduced to the Rocky franchise was because of our Santa Claus the Movie episode. Where whenever I looked at Meredith Burgess, I was like, it's the Penguin.
And of course,
and you got so mad at me.
Well, first off, I'm still mad at you, Spencer.
Brilliant.
For that.
I don't
because
why. I'm so
because
proud
that
of
movie
you.
Is like it has marred.
Classic?
It has marred my view of Christmas movies. I mean, already everything that Amy does with her like Hallmark movies. What was it? A Castle for Christmas? That's not
that
a Christmas movie.
That was an accident. It turned into great content. You can't be mad at me.
Yeah, we made
I'm
a whole episode
confused.
About it. Arguing. We made an episode.
About what? It is a Christmas movie.
Oh, no, yes. No, fine.
We made a whole
it's
episode.
It's coming back around. We're going to get trouble.
We made a whole episode based around even Spencer's frustration and confusion about
he was
how you
so hard
no he was also very fired up because he was like, yeah, no, that's not right.
It was beautiful.
It was like trying to show a child how to use a straw properly and not chew on it. Of course it's a straw,
but is
it's
it a
called
licorice
a straw
or not?
It's called a straw, You use it to...
How much straws we're supposed to chew on now? I mean, paper straws, technically, you can chew. I don't want to. But do you remember,
see,
like,
this is the conversation. This is why, see, throughout all that time, when we were off, we deliberated. That's why we still keep her as an intern, because things like that, it's decisions like that, Spencer.
I was just giving.
HR breathed down our necks for this because of the fact that
we're diversifying, really?
No, HR has always been around.
I know, but that's they were breathing down your necks to ensure what? That you had like
that we had
at the table?
That we had somebody who couldn't tell the difference between a Christmas movie and a regular movie.
Well, that just feels really, really mean.
It's a movie podcast!
I meant fucking mean!
So, anyway, continue.
Because of that, that I shouted that Meredith Burgess was the penguin. Congratulations to me. It got you superheated, and you're like, no, you need to watch Rocky. So you actually came over and watched the first one with me, and I had mixed feelings about it because there were parts where I was like, this seems like...
From the 70s?
No. Because like the Rocky's initial pursuit of Adrian is like, really? He's like, hey, you should be my, you know, you should be my girl. And I'm like, nowadays, this don't fly, bro. And then the farther into the movie I got, I was like, okay, I can actually see the heart. And then talking with you, Eddie, about like Sylvester Stallone and everything he's done for this character and how he's built it. And then watching the subsequential movies, skipping five, and doing Rocky Balboa, and then Creed.
Yeah,
because
around the time only
Creed 2
I think
was just
Creed,
about to come out, or it had just come out too.
I think Creed 2 had just come out because you. I remember asking you after all that. I was like, "Have you even actually seen the Creed movies?" And you're like, "No, nope. I had no interest." She goes, "I had no interest because I never saw the Rocky movies." And so I'm like, "It's one of those things where Rocky, the franchise of Rocky, is kind of like that rite of passage for a lot of." Movie fans for a lot of people like much like you know watching The Wizard of Oz for the first time or watching movies like your first horror movie you know whatever it may be it's a rite of passage or watching The Lord of the Rings you know in like you know a sequential order of like you know over a weekend or whatever like those are all rites of passage. The Rocky franchise has always been a rite of passage, much like for me to be honest I put the Rocky franchise up there like with Star Wars because Sylvester Stallone created an iconic character out of pretty much himself, like literally based it on himself, and ultimately gave people a sense of hope in the little guy. All of it based around some random fight that I believe Muhammad Ali had with I don't think he was a well-known boxer at the time, but throughout the entire fight, obviously Muhammad Ali had kind of been dancing around. It was a famous boxer against some nobody, and this nobody swung and hit the guy hard enough that knocked him down on the floor, and he went down, and everybody freaked out because they're like, "This is like one of the more famous boxers, and he just got knocked down by a nobody." So, watching these movies, it's kind of a universal, you know, understanding for a lot of people that. If you see the movies, you can't just stop with one. You have to like watch them all to understand the journey. And it has been a journey for a lot of people who watch it. So,
yeah, I agree.
Was there anything else you wanted to add?
It's Carl Weathers, not Werthers, right?
He's not a candy. Carl Weathers, the man.
I was making sure.
Carl Weathers, original.
Carl Weathers. He walks around and he's like the heir to the Werthers factory. You know,
I couldn't help it because hilariously enough this was in the same time so I watched the Rocky franchise really brief aside I promise I'll do it but because of this I believe I watched the first Predator shortly after Rocky and I was like oh it's the same guy I get it and then there's a lot of Toy Story jokes for their short for
they made a Halloween short for Toy Story and it has Carl Weathers playing Combat Carl
he loses
his arm at one point in time.
He loses his hand.
And it's interesting.
So, yeah. But it was Carl.
The only reason why I know that is because when she saw Predator, she texts me. She goes, oh, my God, it's just like Toy Story. And I'm like, no, it's nothing like Toy Story. You know,
There's
Sid did
no
not
blood.
Go around. And
no, it was toys. It was like Toy Story something of terror. Yeah. It's the Halloween episode. Yeah. And it was just... Okay, so I finally got it. Anyway, I really started to appreciate and enjoy the growth of not only the characters, but the cinematography and the directing style that Sylvester Stallone continued to explore through all of those movies up into even his participation in Creed 1 and 2. And I hate Polly and his robot.
Yeah,
that robot. Polly was the ultimate balancer, if you will, of the films, because there was so much hope and good coming out of like Rocky and Adrian that they're like, you know what? This is just too sweet and sappy. We got to throw the most like
ridiculous,
salacious, like
ridiculous,
like a disheartening character we could find.
And
somebody,
get him a robot that becomes sassy.
We literally need to cast a wet blanket for this movie. And that was Polly.
That's so terrible for this person. It's like, hey, we need someone to just be a real downer in our movie. You seem like you're a great fit.
Could you be abusive to your sister? Would that work?
Yeah.
Could you have a questionable relationship with a robot?
Well, in terms of like, obviously, I have a deep, like, abiding love for this franchise. This was a movie. I remember watching the first Rocky movie with my dad at home and immediately falling in love with the story of this massive underdog, this individual who just had everything going against him, who was literally living at the bottom of the barrel for life and given an opportunity to essentially be something better than himself, you know, and build himself to that, like aspire for more. And I just, after movie, I just fell in love with the character. I fell in love with the journey. I ended up getting like a collector set for the Rocky franchise, 1 through 5. It was something that I had to have a hand on, like have something accessible. And of course, so I ended up, I don't know what happened to that set. That set got lost probably in the move or something, but I ended up buying all of them on Vudu, as well as all the Creed movies. I'm going to buy Creed 3 as well. For the sake of the franchise, we'll talk about whether or not I liked it or not in a second. But I don't know. This franchise has lasted since the 70s. And like I said, it's akin to Star Wars for me because it carries the story of an unlikely hero coming from the most uncommon of places, rising to become this warrior who continually proves his worthiness and consistently shows that no matter what, you know, you can prevail if you put your heart into it. And honestly, Rocky as a character puts his heart into every single film. You know, every single time he comes, we're not going to talk about the fifth one, but in every single one, just about, even
the one I didn't see, so I am absolved.
Even the one, like even Rocky Balboa, where he's really already like up in his ages. You know, he's already, you know, and they use that as a frame of reference for his character in the film. So transitioning over after Rocky Balboa, that's when we come to Creed and that franchise. And it was unique to find that angle of having found a illegitimate son from the incredible actor or incredible character of Apollo Creed. And so coming into this and driving towards these movies, 1 and 2 fell in love with. It was right in the vein. It fit perfectly within the franchise as a whole. I honestly thought Michael B. Jordan was the perfect character, perfect actor for this character, alongside someone like Felicia Rashad. I mean, who can say no to Felicia Rashad?
Nobody. You know,
Bill Cosby didn't tear her down, so we're good. You know, it just, and then you have Tessa Thompson, you have, you know, all these different characters, and then in 1 and 2 you bring in these unique opponents. 2 was incredible because 2 you brought in the son of Ivan Drago. This movie had a lot of heart to it, much like the first part of that, you know, saga. So now we come to Creed 3, the first film to not have not only a mention of Rocky, but not even a sign. Like, there's maybe one mention of Rocky in the entire film, but everybody had the vast understanding that Sylvester Stallone was not going to have a part in it, and obviously for the reasons we mentioned prior too. So let's jump into, you know, I'm sorry, this is literally just There you go. Those things. Yeah. Hey. Let's talk about first impressions.
Spencer's like, I'm here to take over.
Since you brought it up, Spencer, what were your expectations? Sorry, expectations going into the movie.
Expectations going into the movie. You know, I was here for it, like, just based on the trailer. There's like, oh, Jonathan Majors is in this movie. He's been on a tear, and I was like, this man looks so dang intimidating, and at that point,
and fine. I mean, this man is, he was
built like a brick house and ripped all up and down.
He's come so far from Last Black Man in San Francisco.
You know, it's and it's funny. I was talking to some of the guys over at New Rockstars, and Jessica Clements, who's a really great friend, was like, yeah, I was saying that exact thing. Like, oh my gosh, he looks so ripped. And she goes, no. No, you had to see him in Lovecraft Country, because when he had that white shirt on, you could see all of that. She goes, me and my mom just drooled over the TV. And I'm like, okay, don't make me get the hose, but okay. Because the man just continues to surprise us.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, it was interesting to note that he was going to be the foil in this movie.
Yeah, so after his performance in Loki season one, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is going to be real interesting.
Yeah.
And so going into my first impressions after the movie, I was correct. It was real interesting. Like, just jaw-dropping his performance throughout this movie.
Amy, first impressions.
Expectations.
Or expectations, sorry.
We'll get it.
Because Spencer jumped into first impressions.
He did expectation and then an impression. It was very seamless. Right,
there you go.
Expectation, I was hoping to... Sorry.
Oh, wait, we have to do something. Not too much. Remember, don't give away your whole review right before.
Don't make faces and or just random sounds. Got it.
Or do the things where people are supposed to know
Spencer
what you're doing.
Spencer just leaned back and like, just, you gave me the look of don't do it, and I'm going to try. I promise.
I believe in you.
I won't disappoint you.
HR is going to be reviewing this.
Pressure. Way, so. So expectations. I was actually really excited to see this because I had, much like Eddie, kind of fallen in love with the first two Creed movies. I loved where they went, and I was really excited, again, to see, I'm like, oh, Jonathan Majors. Okay, this is unexpected, and it's going to be fun for what I had seen him in previously.
Yeah.
First impression coming out of the movie, because I saw it with Spencer. I don't have words for this now without making noise.
She's doing it again.
I'm trying.
You've got it.
This is why. Spencer, oh my gosh.
It was something that I'd like to explore further into this conversation.
You know what? I'll take that.
You know what? For the lack of everything she did not say, sure, I'll take it.
Yeah.
She literally said nothing, so. expectations for me.
I could say I liked it and...
Expectations for me, I like I said, I'm a huge fan of this franchise, and I was going in gung-ho. I wanted to see all the heart, all the fighting, all the story, all the elements that made every single film before it successful, and part of the reason why I love the franchise. My expectations were essentially based around the entire franchise. Everything as a whole, because I mean, that's how we have to look at things. We look at Marvel like this, we look at other films like this, same thing. We look at this movie and we have to see everything that came before it and what it's built to this point. You know, it's like you create this incredible, you know, architecture of this immense skyscraper, and they're about to put the crown on this skyscraper, and you're hoping that it's as immaculate as the rest of it. That was my thought going in. Those were my expectations. Now, first impressions after watching the film, which I saw it a few days after you guys saw it, it was a very interesting take on the franchise as a whole. It was a very interesting take for the journeyman, if you will, the kind of narrative for someone who, of course, like we stated before, is a fighter, is someone who's a warrior, someone who comes against something that stands against everything else that he believes in. And he has to prove his, you know, his worth against all odds. Now, the outcome of that is something that we'll explore and talk about. The movie had its high points. It had its low points. And I have to say, this movie actually gave me pause to wonder if it hit the mark, like, frankly. And that goes to kind of our segue into talking about the performers, the actors. Now, we had, as I stated, Michael B. Jordan directing and also starring in the role. Adonis Creed is, interestingly enough, a very complex character from what we've seen thus far. His history, his past is you know, complex. His, you know, upbringing, his training, his bouts, his winnings and losings, it all stems from, you know, this character that not only Sylvester Stallone has put together, but also the producers and the writing team, not to mention Ryan Coogler, mm-hmm. who is a phenomenal director out of the Bay, had created so much empathy within this character that you couldn't help but at times be unsure of whether or not you wanted to root for him or you wanted him to pull back, like stay behind. And that's the kind of genius of a director like that. Coming into this film, I thought Michael B. Jordan was good. I don't know if he was great, though, in this movie. I don't know how you guys feel about Michael B. Jordan's role, but I liked the character. I liked his performance. I don't know if it was as good as 1 and 2. And that's my honest opinion. I don't know. What do you think, Spence? Because you look really befuddled over there.
So, part of this requires me to, like, perfectly remember how he was portrayed in 1 and 2, and I don't.
Yeah.
So, just speaking from the third one, I thought that this was an interesting evolution to his character.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can kind of, like, see throughout the movie, like, the struggle of who he was versus who he is now.
Yeah.
And trying to be more open and just to, like, the people around him.
Yeah.
Which is just not a thing you really see in, like, a fighting movie.
Yeah.
I was like, that's actually, like, really an interesting take. And I actually love that part of it.
Okay.
So, like, I actually think, just from, like, evolution of the character standpoint, I'm actually kind of for this. I actually really liked it.
You like Michael B. Jordan's performance?
Yeah.
What about you, Ames?
I'm a little bit of both. I actually, so there are a good,
so much for tiebreakers.
There are a good chunk of segments in here where it feels like the culmination. Like, we have that great opening sequence where he's at the top of his game. It feels like 1 and 2. And then we start to see not the softening, but I think somebody brings it up at some point later in the film that it's like, oh, he's gone soft because he's an old man now. Like, he's no longer a fighter. And it is part of that evolution.
Which is crazy because he's still young. Like, he's not that old.
You know
old.
How you term out of these things.
Just so young.
Everybody should just be like baseball players and just play until you're like 50.
And then, who wants to get punched into the face until they're 50, except for Rocky Balboa?
I mean, then that's when you go to wrestling. Wrestlers. That's when you go to wrestling,
or wrestlers,
Spencer.
Yeah.
And then you start, you know, choreography. You choreograph
Draco and not Drago.
Actually, like, that would have been an amazing twist for Rocky Balboa to just end up in, like, a WWE equivalent.
He puts on a mask. Hey, yo, I'm here to wrestle you, Big Show. Let's go.
Oh, no.
Go ahead, Ames.
So, I really did like that aspect, that it felt like a natural kind of progression of seeing him shift from the top of his game to something that was sustainable for him and his family. He also had good interpersonal relationships, which I will talk about later, pertaining to particular characters. And it moved it felt kind of like that was just the flow of his life, and it explored it, and it was very organic. Then when we have the introduction of Jonathan Majors' character that comes back, you see the clash of the two, which is where I think for you, Eddie, it started to not lose direction, but it felt there was less intensity because you have essentially two opposing forces. And Jonathan Majors' performance, I'm not going to say outshines Michael B. Jordan, but it does a heck of a job, like, coming front and center and coming hard. And considering also that Michael B. Jordan was directing, you kind of have to balance all of that, where you're wondering if his focus to tell a complete story and to get what he wants and to have the shots that he wants are hindering some of that go at it, the desperation of the fighter that we see in Creed 1 and 2, and being true to the evolution of his character in 3. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, because I feel like the character, yes, is on par with the trajectory for his character, but it always seems like in each film you get just one notch up from that evolution that we expect. Mm-hmm. Like take for instance the Rocky franchise, the Rocky saga part of it. You know, you had somebody who was literally living in a really crappy apartment. He used a knife as a coat hanger. You know, he had two turtles that he took care of.
They were nice turtles, though. Them turtles are living the big life right now.
Which he still has those turtles at his own house. Their names are Cuff and Link.
which I love.
Amazing.
But it's one of those things where I do have to agree that I feel like Michael B. Jordan's directing and his energy going towards that, which, mind you, it's his first at bat, so I can't knock him for that. You know, it's his first go around. However, I feel like his energy was way too split between his giving his performance and creating something unique enough that just put it a little bit above the expectation, which is essentially what we got out of the previous franchise. I akin a lot of this film and the trajectory of this film to the same trajectory of the Rocky franchise in number 3 with Clubber Lang, where we get the instance where he faces something that is new to him, something that is, you know, whatever. He loses not only the fight, but he loses in other things, and he has to rebuild that. And you get a lot of vulnerability, as much as the 80s could muster in terms of vulnerability. You know, the whole, you know, I'm scared, okay? I'm scared of, you know, all that stuff on the beach. You know, and I feel like we were trying to recreate that in a sense, but also give it a modern facelift with some new elements. And I felt like we just kind of fell short of that. Amy, why the heck do you have your hand raised?
Well, I was going to say, since we know that Sylvester Stallone was not in this one, do you feel that it would have helped Michael's, not just directorial debut, but his vision of the film if he had had the backing and the additional on-set support of Sylvester, because he might be able to give him a, like...
Well, I think Sylvester Stallone's inclusion in the story would have also included his thoughts and ideas on the story as well. I have to slightly agree with Sylvester Stallone that his characters, every single instance that his characters have faced, whether if it's him or Adonis, they face these real world type situations that are just at a peak to where it's not something that requires more than just beating it out of someone else. You know, it's something where if it was facing, you know, finding your strength and courage again, or, you know, avenging, not so much avenging, but needing to prove for the whole world that, you know, the Russian death train is not the end all be all for the sport of, you know, boxing, you know, or proving to someone in the middle of a street that not only can he still fight, but he is the best, you know, no matter how clunky that movie was. I thought he was good. I just don't think he was great. And I don't think the film's trajectory conveyed that well enough. I don't know. Let me ask you, Spencer. Do you think that the story had a cohesive enough narrative through it that it made for a reasonable champion? Like, do you think everything that happened in the film and everything that Michael B. Jordan went through for the character himself was all substantiated, like, for the overall story?
You know what, interestingly enough, I feel like the answer is yes, but I also feel like this story should have happened earlier. Mm. Like, this make sense for the character if this was like the second movie.
Yeah.
Because like the things he's doing in this movie for like his character growth, they kind of like give this feeling that like he should be slightly younger than he is being portrayed in this movie. Because, like, I feel like he's learning good lessons. I just feel like he could have probably learned these lessons earlier. But then I also kind of get, because you want to tie some of these things to things that happen later in the movie. And, like, it's kind of, like, a little bit of a narrative mess if you do just move it back. But, like, I feel like just the way he is learning, like, in this movie to just be, like, not as closed off,
yeah,
benefits the character if it happens earlier. Yeah. That's how I kind of feel with it.
Yeah, because I feel like I agree. I really do agree, because I feel like for Adonis Creed and the things that he goes through, it still needs a mentor role.
Yeah.
And it still needs somebody to reel him back in to recognize where the real fight is. And to have the motivation, if you will, to keep pushing him through the means of bettering himself. That feels like that definitely requires like the Mickey role, the role that Rocky has taken up in Creed 1 and 2. In this one, you're right, because it does seem a little daunting for him to just come to this place at the end of the film without any precedence or any credence to it. No pun intended. Like there's no foundation for him to, through that entire fighting montage in the film, come to the place where he's at now to be not only steadied in his heart and in his mind, but also capable of becoming the fighter that he needs to be for the sake of who his foil is, which is, you know, Damian Anderson, aka, you know, Jonathan Majors. So yeah, that really does feel like it like almost should have been the in between one and two, because the next film that comes in that line, which is, you know, Ivan Drago, that does feel like a more unique build up for, like, it would have been like one, the story of three, and then the story of two. Yeah. So I do agree with that. But speaking of our foil, Jonathan Majors. Holy crap.
Oh, my gosh.
We don't have enough expletives to say how wonderful and terrifying this man was in this film.
The man danced.
Hummina.
And he didn't act. He literally danced around everybody on that set. Yep. He portrayed every single emotion you could possibly imagine. Everything from empathy and sympathetic to cold and hard to, you know, chauvinistic and braggadocious, to, you know, sorrowful and humble, and that was all through the span of this entire movie. Mm-hmm. Like you get a such a unique, you know, performance out of this character. You see this journey, you would almost have to say that this movie isn't about Michael B. Jordan, or it isn't about Adonis Creed. It is about Damian Anderson, because that's the film that I felt like, if that was the focus of that film, almost anthological, that was a story in itself, you know. Yeah. And honestly, that is part of the reason why I was still fully engaged. If it was anybody else as the foil, if it was some rando dude or some, you know, whatever boxer, like the guy that was at the beginning of that fight, who happens to be the same guy from the end of the first film, if that was just him
fighting in South Africa.
Yeah, that's the same guy that he fights, because he's about to go to prison, and so they do that one last fight.
Oh, that's right.
Okay. I believe in the UK. I think they fight in the UK. I forget. But either way, if that third film had been about their fight, I probably would not have stayed as engaged. But Jonathan Majors is a freaking magnet of, like, just masculinity and complexity of emotion. And we're not strangers to this. That's the great thing, is that we, like Spencer had mentioned, we saw him in Last Black Man in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We saw him in the season finale of Loki. We've seen him in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, which we'll do that review, you know, in an extra credit because it'll just be another Jonathan Majors gush.
pretty much.
and we've, you know, I've been wanting to see him in Lovecraft Country, but also in like YouTube videos and things that he, you know, when he comes out and talks about stuff. The man is a Hollywood treasure right now, mm-hmm. and he is proving his weight in gold every single time. And I have to say, I honestly am excited to see all the things that he gets a chance to do, because he is a phenomenal actor. You know, what do you think, Spence?
I think this movie would not have worked without him. Like,
I agree. Like,
mm-hmm. He is like so central, just Jonathan Majors himself,
yeah.
to bringing this character alive, that the whole movie would fall apart without him. And just like he just makes the whole dang thing. He's so like just watchable in this yeah. movie. Like pretty much everything I've seen him in thus far.
Yeah.
Which is actually really impressive now that I think about it. Like I haven't even seen anything where I'm like, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
No, like he's just like out for blood in this movie.
Yeah.
And, like just killing it
yeah.
constantly.
And I have to agree. Jonathan Majors being in this role of Damian Anderson, no one else could have done it. Yeah. Like there was no one else that should have been given, it should have been given to, and he had to absolutely be the person for that, because not only was he the glue for this entire movie, because he was the like the centerpiece, if you will, that drew in everybody to his gravity, if you will, but he was also the most emotionally, you know, nuanced character that gave so many different types of performances that you literally thought at some point in time, you're like, how is this going to go south? How is this relationship? How is Jonathan Majors going to turn into the bad guy? And when it happens, you're like, oh crap. And while you're watching his just kind of spiral into becoming that individual that we mentioned, that braggadocious boxer, the person who is highly confident in himself, the person who doesn't need anybody else because he has always been it all along, you come to a place where you're like, when did this happen? Is this the same guy? You know, and he's so impressive, you know.
Yes, sorry, I got distracted and I came back into it. I was like, yes, this is exactly
Amy, Jonathan Amy Majors. Has Jonathan Majors shirtless on her phone.
That was not what I was looking at, but thank you.
You're welcome. We saw it. It's okay.
No, that was not it. I was reading a Vanity Fair article interview that he did. Yeah, this is, I mean, we can't stop gushing about Jonathan Majors, and it's not for just his appearance. It's literally for, he does the work. Not only does he do the work with heart, but he does the work well.
Yeah,
and very true. He doesn't beat around the bush, and everything bears the mark of his sincere desire and his love of his craft.
Yeah,
I didn't think that I would find him as delightful as foils in the two things that he's foils as. But this character, and mind you, I saw the movie twice. I couldn't help it. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. And it's not just because he did a great job, but okay, let's be honest. He did an amazing job. And I watched every flick of his looks at people, the way he carried himself, how he slowly shifts physically, and his face just in just these small ticks of moments where he speaks such volumes. And 100, I agree, 100%. This movie would not work without him. Yeah. If it had been anybody else, it wouldn't matter if Sylvester Stallone had been there. If Jonathan Majors had not been in the foil position, this movie would not have had any legs.
True.
Like, wow. It would have been knocked out from the start. Sorry, yeah. I couldn't help that pun. It was coming. It was coming.
And it's interesting because as you look at his character arc and you look at everything else, his arc stands alone. He doesn't need to do anything to Adonis per se outside of his like initial heel turn. He doesn't have to do anything else to, you know, hurt him or to say things or to whatever. He is a much, and I know a lot of people who are fans of the Rocky franchise are going to probably get upset at this, but he is a much better Clubber Lang than Mr. T.
Baller.
You know, and that's saying something because
people coming at you.
Right? I pity the fool and boom, I get hit in the face. I feel like Jonathan Majors creates a much better foil in what Mr. T was trying to achieve and proves it not only in his, you know, performance in the ring, but his performance outside of it, plus in the scope of the dynamic that he has that friendship with Adonis. I mean, you see all of that play out in this almost operatic sense of how he's strategically placing certain pawns on the board in this like real life game of chess to pit himself as the next contender for the heavyweight or the one of the championships. And he achieves it, and he just rolls with that, you know, just that whole character arc that he does.
Well, and I also think that in juxtaposition to Mr. T's Clubber Lang, Jonathan Majors doesn't have anything to lose. There is no technical notoriety at this point or big Hollywood celebrity energy that Jonathan Majors carries. He has some for people that have watched his other work.
Yeah.
But he is not Mr. T, like, thankfully, at all. But he doesn't carry that notoriety as well, which means that he doesn't have anything to lose going for broke. And the thing that I think has been consistent across all the work that we've seen from him, regardless of if it's Marvel or not, he has gone for broke in every single instance.
Yeah.
He, Jonathan Majors, his role in this film, his character is a unique perspective. It's like the other side of that coin of the Rocky journey. He is essentially Rocky, but on the other side of that coin. If Rocky, after winning, after doing things, because Rocky was a loan shark. Rocky did, you know, all these different things. He was working for under, he was fighting underground bouts. He was fighting dirty. He was, you know, doing all these things. If Rocky hadn't have stood his ground for his moral standpoints, I feel like this is the character we would have gotten. And I feel like Jonathan Majors fulfills that to the most excellent T that we could ever see. Now, in terms of other characters, we have, of course, Felicia Rashad, who is always amazing.
They did her dirty. They did her dirty.
We'll talk about that in a second. We'll talk about that in a second.
Spencer's the one that brought that up first, and I was like, dang, he's right.
Wood Harris, who returns as Tony Burton, the little Duke, the other trainer. It's always great seeing him in movies. I remember the first time I saw him in Remember the Titans, and every time I see him, all I think of is like, we are the Titans, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's football stuff. And there was a lot of other great performances done by folks that didn't really have a lot of time on screen. But another one is Tessa Thompson, who in this kind of viewpoint, I guess, in terms of this kind of filter, was trying to embody as much of the Adrian role as she could. And we get some of that. We get some of that in there. You know, we don't get a lot of the evolution of her character in this movie. The great difficulty that she was facing in part two doesn't seem to be as apparent, or at least doesn't seem to bother her as much as the concern was built in the second film.
Mm-hmm.
So I do kind of struggle with that a bit, because I felt like that was a unique part of, you know, Creed 2, her recognizing the decline of her hearing, the recognition, you know, if they have a kid, what's going to happen, and we do get a little of that follow up, you know, in Mila Davis Kent's role as Amara, the daughter, who is deaf fully, and actually the actress herself is also deaf, so that, you know, helped that as well. But talking about the incident with Felicia Rashad, I'll say it now, and I'll say it every time. You do not need to go Disney in order for you to give motivation to a character. Disney seems to have a thing where they like to kill parents. And in this...
That's putting it real life.
Just about every movie, every Disney movie, has a dead parent in it. Mm-hmm. Because we never see Sid's dad. I'm just saying, in Toy Story. that could have been why. I feel like... So, in the film... Like I said, spoiler alert. In the film, we do have the unfortunate portion of the film where we do find that Felicia Rashad does pass away. due to a stroke, I believe. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that there's no motivation in that. Like, it doesn't serve the story's purpose, in my opinion. I feel like the overall story was going in a decent direction, and then with this kind of pivot point for Michael B. Jordan's character, I'm like, why? Like, why did you have to do that? Because it's not like he was fighting for his mom, or it's not like Damian said some, like, really ugly things to him about his mom or things like that, or was the reason why. Like, you go again, going back to Rocky III, we have the situation that happens with, you know, Clubber Lang in the beginning in their fight, and it over exerts, like, Mickey after, like, he gets all angry or whatever, he gets taken back, and then Mickey dies as a result of that fight. And there goes his motivation, it's Rocky's trainer. Rocky has to find training with, you know, Apollo and his team. And, you know, it's new to him and all these different things. But that's part of the motivation, trying to make Mickey proud, trying to, you know, all that. None of that has to do with Felicia Rashad. None of that has to do with her character, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I feel like killing off the most wonderful woman in all of cinematic and television history was a waste.
Spencer, in deep thought.
I see what you're getting at, but I also feel like the movie...
How dare you agree with that Felicia Rashad should die?
No.
No, there was so much rage. Don't.
No, I was... You were there. You
I
saw.
Sat you literally... threw up your hands and then slammed them down on the armchairs while the credits were rolling and the lights were barely up. And you're like, no, they need to stop killing these black queens. Yep. And I was just like, no, I feel it. Let's go.
Yeah, that is what I said. But I feel like...
Uh-oh. Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm trying to think of the best way to say this.
I'm trying to prepare for what you're about to say, because it's like... Are you citing?
No, what I want to say basically ends up being death does not always have a narrative payoff.
Ooh.
True.
But like, because like, I feel like that's how this movie was trying to play this, is that like, she died because she died. Mm-hmm. Not because like, you know, it was part of like some grand narrative scheme. People die.
True. But as from a screenwriting point of view, from a from the perspective of somebody who is trying to create a film that builds anticipation, tension. Try to, you know what? I'm getting there. It's been a minute. That's trying to build tension. You lose the one person that could essentially be the Mickey role, that could essentially be the Rocky role, and for what? There's no point. I mean, she gave some really great, like, she was already a character who had great insight, who had great knowledge, who was already wise. Why put her in a situation where now she's taken out? So who's left? Duke? Is Duke your like?
Stitch. We get Stitch. You don't say nothing.
Is Ivan Drago's son the new wise, you know, mentor? We lose the one grip on reality and the foundation that he needs to get to. For what? Like, I get that in reality, in the reality sense, yes, death doesn't always have to have a narrative. You know, although now that I mentioned that and I'm rethinking, I just literally saw all the last Final Destination movies, and so I'm like, yeah, death does. But I get that, but for the sake of a story that needs tightening, that needs to have its, because it's a carnival ride that's built that doesn't have solid foundation, and there's this one massive peg that is keeping this entire ride from fully tipping over, and you remove that peg, leaving the other, you know, the other pegs to keep it still, then what is the motivation of the character? What is the Gandalf the Grey in this? The one person who may not be perfect, may not be immortal or anything at the time, However, he's the one who gives the most wisdom, who is there, even at his old age, to lead and to guide.
I feel like this is, again, the movie being in a weird place of, like, that time skip really messed me up. Because I feel like... I feel like the movie, in its own weird way, is like, Adonis is old enough to figure this out. Which, like...
But that's like a Rocky IV thing after so much time, and we're kind of still at a Rocky III.
The thing is, are we? I don't know where, like when that time skip happened, I kind of lost, like, my sense of, like,
yeah,
how far into the story with Adonis we really were.
Yeah.
Because, like, one and two were very tightly together.
It followed the Rocky like, equation.
Oh, well, they're literally right after each other.
It had the pickup right where we left off type of thing.
And, like, even though it was only a skip of a few years, like, the fact that Amara was older and, like, everything kind of, like...
It's about what?
She went from baby to eight.
Yeah.
So about 8 years since the last film?
Yeah. So, like, at this point, I'm like, does Adonis need, like, a guiding? Like, I know he still has things to learn, but, like, it comes across like the movie is trying to be, like, you know, he kind of just needs to stop and, like, focus in and then just, like, do what he needs to do.
So how does the death play into that?
I was the one who said that death doesn't have purpose.
I don't know. I just, I feel like, oh, go ahead, Amy. Go ahead.
Yay, I get to speak.
Oh, my God. You know what? So, no, just go.
I'm sad.
Let's hear your truth, Amy.
Okay. I don't know if it's my truth, but I do understand that usually death does not have a narrative. Mm-hmm. And it did feel very ham-fisted that suddenly we see Felicia Rashad. She's gorgeous. She's the best grandma in the world. Like, she's vivacious and fun, and she still carries all of that. We find out very slyly, very, like, not coyly, but gently, that she's had a stroke, and she's still taking it not super seriously, but yeah, she's comfortable with when she goes, she's going to go, but it's not today. I loved the humanity in that. And then the fact that when the confrontation comes with, spoiler, with Adonis about the letters that she kept for Damien, and her efforts to protect him from himself, to give him space to move on, she was okay accepting that he was going to be angry. And then with her collapse and then her sudden demise, it was almost like it felt a little ham-fisted that they were trying to say, put everything aside, death is the great equalizer, you can't be mad at her, you know, type of thing. If you want to make this right, go through, do whatever, which is the Tessa Thompson kind of pep talk. Do whatever you have to do, because that's where we're here. We're trying. We're going to do the best that we can with what we have, and whatever you need to do, do it. So it's kind of like, it's in this gray area where, no, she did not need to die.
Mm, yeah.
Like, don't kill Felicia Rashad ever. Yeah, I don't care.
I would have been perfectly fine if she was,
I don't know. Alive. Spencer said that she should die, apparently.
I did not say that. Don't
start killing all these wonderful black queens over here.
No.
Queen Ramunda would hit you for something.
That I'm was hard enough.
Go for that one.
Nope. None of us are. I felt that it was in almost a way if Rocky had died, and that they had swapped places and she had still been alive, and Rocky, our Gandalf the Grey, had been the one that suddenly passed away because he had a brain aneurysm erupt and there was no way to save him. There wasn't that full circle of, like, he's the mentor, he's dying, okay, get inspired and go fight.
Yeah.
Her, we have, they knew this was coming, they didn't know when it was going to be sudden, but then also when she's on her deathbed and she thinks that Adonis is Apollo.
Mm-hmm.
And that entire sequence was what she's talking about, how Adonis saved her and that she was so angry and he's the one that fixed it for her. I think it was also kind of like trying to get maybe to get Adonis in to understand that it's okay to let go of your anger and of the past and to move forward whether you are moving through your grief, whether you're moving through the trauma, the anger, whatever it is, to let go and move forward, which they try to kind of hit on in the later act when it's like training montage. And Duke keeps telling him to do that. So
what I would have wanted, and this is my rewrite, this is my thought, what should have happened?
We'll tell Ryan Coogler.
I'll give him a call. What should have happened was Damien, in a fit of rage, should have punched the crap in one solid swing at Duke, killing Duke.
Just knocking him out flat.
Well, doing a whole Ivan Drago. Like an unsuspecting straight, you know, right hook to the temple, knocking him out and completely just causing like a full collapse of his brain or whatever. I don't know. But something along those lines where Adonis, feeling guilty for everything that he had done in terms of all his decisions, finds himself in a dark place, in a dark spot, where his mom, who is still very much alive, comes in to essentially give the Apollo Creed speech. Mm. In that, you know what? These things happen. You need to prove that you are better and a bigger man than he is. I'm going to help you train. And he's going to look at her and say, you? He goes, who do you think was there to train with your dad? Who do you think helped him with all these times with the punching, blah, 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 and have her pull out all these things. I would have loved to have seen that training montage filled with moments where he was struggling and nothing but a Felicia Rashad mother touch to add to that sequence.
That would have been an Oscar.
To give him all the tools, all the speeches, you know, there is no tomorrow, that whole thing. I would have loved to have seen Felicia Rashad embody the role that her husband took on when Rocky was in that place and immediately be the thing that he needs to ground himself, to anchor himself. Because we don't see any anchoring in the films. We don't see him tether himself to a fixed point except for in himself that he has to get to on his own. You know, there's no Gandalf the Grey. There's no guidance. There's no push.
But it's also, I think this is where we were talking about that this should have been the second movie instead of the third. But if that goal was to have a hitching post, essentially, for your drive, that he is of the age, if he was older, I think that's where we're all like, the story's, it's got some work to do. That it would be in and of himself and his family, because his legacy is watching him wide-eyed and expectant from the seats ringside, mm-hmm. who is watching like the generations, the dynasty, the Creed dynasty coming through, and that is the hitch. That should be the hitching post when you don't have anything else. And everything has essentially left you and your mentors are gone. You find it within yourself, but you also fight for the people around you, which Tessa Thompson, and I'm bringing her up because we should be talking about everybody. Tessa Thompson does and attempts to do a really good job about that, showing not only what she's given up between 2 and 3, which I was like initially completely flabbergasted at.
Which, to those who don't know, Tessa Thompson's character has essentially given up performing and just produces and writes now.
Yeah, to ensure that she's maintaining some of her hearing. And she's fully able, she's still got her hearing, she's able to hear enough. She's taken to raising their daughter, to having a life, and the speech that she gives after Felicia Rashad dies is that, you know, this wasn't, like, giving up her dream was hard, but she tries every day to be happy with what she has. And it toes the line of that, well, you're settling. Why aren't you, like, it toes the line of both Adonis and I keep going Jonathan Majors. It's just Jonathan Majors and Jonathan Majors close. In Damien, Adonis and Damien, where Damien has the desperation for, it doesn't matter. I have nothing to lose. I will pursue this until
I'm beaten. Which is the Clubber Lang storyline.
Beaten into the ground. And you have Adonis who is going, I have a legacy to protect. I have a life to protect. And so you're towing that line of the, is this the go for broke, or is this be content, continue to strive, be content, but don't push to the I'm going to have a brain aneurysm if I get knocked out in a fight one more time. Like, it's she brings that emotion. She tries to bring additional emotional my brain just turned off. She tries to bring additional additional emotional weight where you see it and the counsel that they're in. And I think it's because, and Spencer, we were talking about this, was because of therapy, we're able to recognize, I think, more growth in people. Was that what we were talking about?
Yeah.
Go. I can't. My brain's melting. Help.
No, that's generally.
The intern has hit her peak. We've run out of intern hours. So.
Yeah, no, it did seem like, especially with Adonis, at least for me, that like he seemed to be like using, I don't know if he actually went to therapy, but he seemed to be using tools from there. But like later on in the movie after he like stops being like closed off. Mm-hmm. Because just like him opening up to people, since, you know, I've also started going to therapy, like I kind of really super connected with him on that. Nice. Where like I guess I used to be angry too. So like I kind of like see or I kind of like can see like his viewpoint.
And you get mad at me for shushing babies in movies.
Hey, shush.
I mean, you need to stop shushing those babies.
I will never stop shushing.
They babies. Don't know. If
they don't know the movie either, so they should go.
Yeah, so like I just, that's one of the things I appreciated about this movie. It was just like the ability for the character to really take in himself. Because like it's not something I was expecting from a movie where also the main character is punching people in the face.
Very true.
Moving on, like I feel like, as I stated, I feel like there's a lot to this narrative, there's a lot to this story that seems to tether, and I can see where Sylvester Stallone was kind of like going to dark places and so forth, because you do find that the inciting incident that causes Damien to go away to prison for a long time and Adonis not going to prison because he ran away was because Adonis gets into a fight with someone who they both remember from the group home that they were both in that was unsavory towards them, to say the least.
That's a very polite version of he beat children to a pulp to prove a point.
Well, I wasn't going to go into the full detail, but okay, there.
Ta-da.
Yeah, he beat children. he essentially abused them. That's to the extent that we know, like that he abused them. But I don't know. Like, I feel like having Sylvester Stallone's touch into the story would have drawn away from that mindset of needing to go there. And creating elements within the story currently to motivate and push the character forward as well as the story. So like I said, I'm torn. I can see where you're coming from, Spencer, about the whole death doesn't need a narrative. But at the same time, in movies like this, I think maybe we've gotten so desensitized to the idea of what Disney has done and what other films have done where the requirement for somebody to lose something is as passe as turning the page to the next, you know, part of the script. Like we look at it and we're like, oh, okay, well that happened. So where's the character going next? They're gonna meet a frozen snowman, like things. Ooh. Like that.
really?
Both their parents die in that one.
But that was like years.
Tarzan's parents got eaten by a jaguar,
and he was a baby.
Yeah.
He remembers.
And he goes from there to. Anyway.
To Glenn Close's sweet gorilla.
The fact of the matter is that maybe also there's an argument to this, to the fact that we've become so desensitized to the quality of characters just effortlessly being removed from films for the sake of adding more emotional depth or weight to a film. Without motivation, just happens. Oh, we lose somebody. Oh, wow. You know, because I was reading an article the other day saying, you know, that a lot more movies are becoming more and more to the element to where when they've become franchises, that anybody is capable of being lost from the film. And unfortunately, I think we're seeing that a lot more nowadays, and we just take it as face value. Like, okay, they died. Where does the character go to next? Without it having a sensible impact to the overarching story. I mean, we look at something as so unique as the first Alien film, where we think everything is fine. We think the character who has been in sick bay for so long is better, and everybody's eating. And then John Hurt, mm-hmm. John Hurt's character, ultimately ends up dying, and it impacts everybody, and everybody is impacted by that first death to the point to where they are still in shock until the next person dies. But it had an impact. It wasn't just, oh, he's died, leave him there, let's go and move forward. It's life is precious and valuable, and if it's lost in a movie, its loss has impact. What is the impact that Felicia Rashad's character's death has on the overarching story for Adonis Creed?
We're mad. As audience members,
but what we about have, the characters?
Well, we have...
What's the evident impact for the character to survive in so many words?
We don't also get to see the impact of the people that she was closest to, where mad props and shoutouts to Mila Davis Kent, who was a brilliant Amara. Not only is she a deaf actress, she stood toe-to-toe and made everyone around her pick up their game to emote, to respond to her acting. And then, like, her impact, like, her and Tessa Thompson seem to have even a closer relationship with Felicia Rashad than Michael B. Jordan's Adonis.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that we just glossed over that sucker hard. And I'm like... You have a little girl whose grandmother absolutely adored her, and they adored each other. And then you have Tessa Thompson talking about that she was essentially the closest thing she had to a mother in a long time. And it's like, okay, we're gonna go fight and punch people in the face now. Goodbye.
That's a really great point. I have to agree, because honestly, now that I'm thinking about it, if that transition went to from losing his mom. Not to that conversation that they have at the foot of the bed,
but to
the daughter who becomes angry or becomes, mm-hmm. Cold and unfeeling, because that's what she thinks her dad would want. And that becomes the eye opener for him to prove that he's not this cold, unfeeling, fighter who just fights his way through his issues. That would have been the better motivation to prove to his daughter, not only is he growing in his physicality, but he's also growing in his emotional well-being as well as his mental well-being.
Well, and it would have tied into the point where we come to find out that Amara wants to fight because she's seen all of his fights and she's passionate. And there's this great conversation that he and Tessa have, where they talk about, they can't keep punching. You can't just keep punching your problems. You need to know what you're fighting for. And he's training Amara.
And the thing is that you say that, I totally had forgotten that even happened in the movie. Because to be honest, that is such a glossed over scene, mm-hmm. that it's like, wait, that did happen in the movie. But the emotional impact, the actual implications of that throughout the entire arc for our character, our main character, is lost. Mm-hmm. We don't see that again.
Well, go for it. Sorry.
Okay. Because I was thinking, especially at the part where it's like, I'm going to just teach you a few things. I was like, she is about to punch this child at the school.
The bully that ripped her picture. I'm like, girl, just pivot. All from the power in your legs.
Because I was like, oh, I'm not ready to see this girl get kicked out of school. Because that's where I thought we were going. And then we didn't. I'm like, okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And the entire speech that he tells her that he's signing to her, that people think that boxing is about power and violence. He's like, no, it's about timing and focus. And it's all these things that if we had transitioned from the loss of Felicia Rashad to a conversation, and he comes in and finds Amara beating something up, breaking things, like the grief and anger that's around there, and she turns around and she punches Adonis, you have that space of understanding and showing, yes, it's okay to move and process through your emotions, and there are ways to express our emotions, but what are you fighting for and why are you fighting for? Is this timing and focus? And then transitioning that grief and understanding and realizing that that's part of him letting go, that it's not just violence that needs to be solved, but it's a part of who he is and how he grounds himself and moving forward to forgive, which would lead beautifully into that third act fight. Like,
yeah, I think that would have also, honestly, in the justification of that, like, cause that's the inciting, or that's the catalyst, but what is the spark? Like, what is the thing that the catalyst is sparking into, you know, into existence? Yeah. Any other thoughts or concerns about the film, or even highlights? Did you guys have any highlights?
Oh, yes. I would like to talk about the stylization of the fight between Adonis.
Yeah.
Like, that last fight. Like, now that I know he's an anime fan, I'm like, oh, well, he wanted to be in an anime fight, but in real life. And I'm like, that's kind of like what part of that fight was. Especially, like, I've never seen such an artistic fight in a movie.
Yes.
It drew a little bit on the film, the Rocky Balboa film, mm-hmm. in terms of his fight that he had, but not to that extent to where it complete this boxing sequence literally transported everybody to a whole nother realm. Mm-hmm. They you know, shadow realmed Yu-Gi-Oh this whole entire thing, and they were boxing in, like, not only in the physical sense, but even in the emotional sense. And it was that scene alone, that boxing sequence, seriously is a masterclass on the epitome of fighting, not only with your body, but with your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like that knocked it to a T. That's one of the I agree. That's one of the better highlights of the film.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Ames? Any highlights or?
Yes, two, which I know they had shown, I think, the shot in the trailer, but when...
She's like, that time when Jonathan Majors had his shirt off and he was doing
pull-ups. No, he was doing the two-arm, like, up the rope, the two ropes.
Told you, with the shirt off.
That was nuts. That was not in the trailer. I was talking about the shot where it's the blue light and the white, or in the yellow light, and you've got Jonathan Majors on one side and Michael B. Jordan on the other before he goes into that first fight. And the way it's framed, the way it's lit, the way they're looking at each other, it's so, so well shot and set. That's beautiful. And then the other thing that I always think is a highlight, because we were going, there's a palpable absence of Rocky in this, was the mantra going into the third fight, which was one step, one punch, one round at a time, which was very Mickey.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's even also a sense where Michael B. Jordan does a portion of the speech that Rocky gives to his son in Rocky Balboa. You know, it's not about how hard you get hit, but it's about how many times you keep getting back up and things like there was a portion of that I'm like, hey, he didn't forget about him. Cool.
Yeah. we just wanted some more Sylvester. Come back, buddy. We'll take you back. It'll be great.
I do have a table for the question
table
for the
table for the question.
You get a table. You get a table.
Yes.
I do have a round table question. Here's a question for you guys. Do you guys feel, and this is an earnest question, this isn't something that, you know, do you guys feel moving forward without Sylvester Stallone that this franchise still has any gas left in the tank? Because we've seen what the first round of not having Sylvester Stallone a part of the writing process or part of the narrative direction. Moving forward, as they continue to go, do we think that this movie, that this franchise, still has any more left in it? What about you, Spence?
I mean, that really wholly depends
on
if they have learned about some of the failings of this movie.
Yeah.
Because if they can learn from, like, things they did wrong in this movie and correct them properly, yeah, I could see, like, another movie even without Sylvester. Like, he is a big presence to be missing, but yeah. I still think there could possibly be another movie after this that they could squeeze out. But, like, it's an uphill battle, mm-hmm. and probably unlikely. Hmm. That's Amy? That's how I think.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the Spencer boat. I mean, it's because, of course, the next movie that comes through is going to be the daughter. It's going to be Amara. Mm. Like they,
it's going to be focused around
Amara. Yeah, it feels that direction. Not that there's everything is said and done with Adonis's character, but we feel, especially kind of the finality and the finish of this one, was like, okay, and now I'm done and I'm moving away from it. And I think that while there is still heart in the Creed franchise, it needs a little more Rocky. Mm. And whether that comes in the form of she takes the pilgrimage, she's worked with Duke, she's worked with her dad, and she ends up going to Philly to go get mentored by Rocky, who at this point is legitimately Mickey at this point.
Which,
ancient Mickey.
Which there's no mention that he's died in the movie.
Nope.
So he's that's the only thing that a lot of people are kind of hanging on to.
But I think that there is something to be said about a person who has been what, it's 50 plus years, isn't it?
Yeah, at least. I mean, you're looking at like mid 70s for the first film. I believe it was like 77.
So 70, 80, 90, 2000. It's easily over 50 years that Sylvester has taken in everything, has fine-tuned, has found the moment.
76. Oof.
Who can do math? Not me. but
you're looking at probably about 47 years.
So we're going to round up and say 50, to be very honest, because he was writing it long before. But Sylvester Stallone has taken 50 years essentially worth of heart and has evolved with his character, where he brings continual heart and life and passion to the project, which, to be very honest, come Creed 4 or Creed whatever, I want to see him back in there to see him rein in everybody and be, as you put it, I want to see him come through Gandalf the White. Like, I want that grand moment where it is a celebration of he's still here for us as the audience.
Yeah.
But he is no less ferocious. He is no less wise to what's going on. And he maintains the spirit of what Meredith Burgess gave to him as his partner in the early Rocky films. True. So,
yeah, I have to agree. This movie is a warning, if you will, to for lack of a better term, this movie is a kind of red flag, red alert type of thing for the filmmakers in this franchise to see how much Sylvester Stallone, as well as the character of Rocky, like how much that character has an impact in these movies. It's literally all based upon his journey. And without the main, you know, torchbearer, if you will, from these films, it may be extremely difficult to continue in his world without him, or at least without his guidance, so to speak. So I don't know if moving forward without his inclusion, there is much gas left in the tank, maybe for one more movie, but even then that might be pushing it. They need to reconsider the efforts that Sylvester Stallone has brought to the table for this film and recognize that the entire franchise has gone through his mind to create the arc that we have for these characters. And without that mind to be a part of it, it's just another boxing movie. It's just another, you know, stand up, square up, and fight till you learn something kind of thing, which a lot of people kind of read as though that was how the original Rocky's movies were, until they began to create the unique journey for Rocky and people started watching them. I'm pretty sure Amy, before she even saw them, just thought of them as just regular boxing movies.
I wasn't even fully aware of boxing movies. I was just aware that this was between Rambo and this is where Sylvester Stallone started. And it was,
this is what he was doing in between, you know, all those other movies, in between Rambo and Cobra and
everything. But it was to a somebody that did not know or did not take the risk, it appeared to be just another sports guy movie.
So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I remembered that. Let's start with Amy. Does the film pass or fail and how many monocles?
So this film does pass for me. Even with the tweaks that we would like to make to the story, it does have one and sections we would like to omit and or squeegee over and fix. There is amazing performances inside of this movie that would have been even better if led by, I believe, or partnered with a different hand. Not to say that Michael B. Jordan's first directorial debut was a flop. It's far from it.
Yeah.
He needed to have somebody who was willing to step back, let him not be behind the camera and focus on that, so that he could actorially, whatever you want to call it, go toe-to-toe with the behemoth, the monstering titan that is Jonathan Majors acting. When it comes to monocles for this thing, it's not my favorite Creed. Sorry, guys. I'm going to give it a 3.6 out of 5 monocles. And that is with the hopes that people are listening, tweak it, and keep going. But side note, that soundtrack is boss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Spencer.
Yeah, this movie passes for me. Yeah, so this movie, there's like, while there are things to definitely complain about, there's a lot to like in this movie as well. And like, just the acting alone in the movie kind of just blows me away with how good some people are in this movie.
Yeah.
From like the little girl Amara to Jonathan Majors to Felicia Rashad. Like, we've been all over it. Like,
R.I.P.
Like,
she's still alive. She's still alive.
Felicia Rashad's still alive.
That was the name of my car.
yeah, like, tiny tweaks to the film would have made it Lego. Even better than it already is to me. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm going to give it a 4. Like, I really liked it. I do think they could do better. And I am interested to see if they think they can not run this franchise into the ground.
That's the hope, right? In terms of myself, I do feel, okay, I'm going to give the story a pass. It does pass for me. I do see a lot of the high points for the film, as I stated. And I do think the overarching character, the arc of the character that Jonathan Majors plays is pivotal to the overall success of the film. Mm. I do feel like certain parts could have been tightened, certain parts could have been omitted or changed. But alas, the end product was what it was. And it wasn't, like I said at the beginning, it wasn't a great movie, but it was a good movie. With that said, there are a lot of things in this movie that still needs the Rocky touch, if you will. And I do think that moving forward, if they do not include Sylvester Stallone, I think this movie franchise is done. Mm-hmm. Earnestly. And so, with that, I am going to also give it a 3.5. Because, like I said, it is the basic expectation of what I was expecting for a Rocky film, but not what I was hoping for, as the legacy has already showed us prior to. I feel like there's room for improvement, and I feel like, you know, hey, Michael B. Jordan is a good director, but I feel like he can be a great director. So,
we'll get better, baby.
So. But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over on our socials page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There we post as often as we can, as well as with stuff from both Spencer's Big Score and Jane on Scene, where we can find that. Where, Amy?
The only place it's ever lived on Instagram, at Jane Unseen, but it don't got a lot on it right now.
We're working on it. you can also check out all of our episodes over at our website at filmlosophers.com, where we have over allegedly 300 episodes, everything compared to everything such as action, comedy, romance, anime. We got conversations about the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website, filmlosophers.com. Com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire and find us there. Look us up at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or a subscribe. Let us know what you think. Drop us a comment in the information down below. Again, we do want to wish our good friend of the show, Rachel, a wonderful birthday, and we do hope that she gets a chance to celebrate with her friends and family, and that, you know what, she has a great birthday month, because that's typically what people have. They have birthday months.
Yeah, we just hope she has a knockout birthday month.
Creed 3 is still in theaters, so if you get a chance, head on over to your local theater, support your local movie theaters in your area, and check it out. Let us know your thoughts. If you have thoughts about this movie, let us know in the comments on those pages on the podcast apps. We'd love to hear your thoughts. But, like I said, that wraps up another awesome episode. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern Amy.
Still. Class dismissed.